I hope on this election day you plan on making a trip to the polls. If you haven't already done that, I will be going to the polls after my shows and after I eat, because my brain functions better with a few calories down the old stomach. Vote for whomever you think is the best candidate. Again, as I've probably talked about, I'm an independent. I don't really even understand political parties. But I have made it pretty clear my choice for the all-important governor position is former Jeopardy champion Rich Cordray. And by the way, of course, why would I think otherwise? The interviewer to the stars, Scott Spears, will be talking with Rich Cordray later today. But of course, Scott Spears pretty much talks to everybody, especially important people, so why would I expect anything different? Of course, on this important day in politics, we will be speaking with someone who is generally a Democrat, but again, like myself, doesn't always look at the political party, and there are certainly many Republicans that he has been fond of. We might touch upon that in this show. He's in Florida, and this is not primary voting day in Florida, but of course, Ohio seems to affect every state, and Ohio primaries have at least indirect a ripple effect on goings-on in other states. And without further ado, whom was I referring to? Of course, I was referring to Dr. Ronald L. Feynman, our official presidentologist and historian in residence. Ron, thank you for joining us today on this primary election day in the Buckeye State.
Yeah, good morning, Adam. Again, it's great to be on your show.
It is a pleasure, as always. Now, of course, I should know this, but remind our listeners, when is primary day in Florida?
I think primary day is in August, actually. We do it very late. I think it's the last week of August. They don't have a long ahead. So the whole battle goes on for the nominations until August, and then we have about 10 weeks until the election. They don't do it early.
Well, that is intriguing that it's so late. So you're not a Super Tuesday state. You're not an early primary state. You guys are kind of a late summer event.
Well, that's only for the state elections. For the presidential year, you know, it's much earlier.
Oh, okay, so in a presidential year, you actually hold primaries earlier in the year.
Yes, usually in March. Yeah,
I was
but
thinking
of course,
like
it will be in 2020. We can't know yet the exact dates of everything.
Right, I was thinking primaries are the same time, regardless of whether or not it's a presidential election. I didn't know that in Florida, in a presidential election, it's actually held much earlier, 5 months earlier.
Yes.
Do a lot of states do that? Here in Ohio, it's always in May, so that's not something I'm used to.
No, I can understand. It's a little chaotic, but Florida always has been a little different and strange, I would say. I've lived here for 29 years, and it's, you know, I don't really like the way they do things here, but it's the way it is, you know.
Yeah, Florida is a bit of a problem child. I'm thinking back to the Hanging Chads and the 2000 election and George W. Bush, and we're still not really sure who won that election, but...
Well, I know who won. I know Al Gore really won it, but the Supreme Court intervened. I just spoke about that on Monday night at a lecture about Bush v. Gore. It happened to come up. I was talking about John Paul Stevens on the court who was in dissent on that decision and said that there should be no interference with the state courts by the Supreme Court. And I think he was right. But, of course, the 5-4 majority gave the election to Bush by 537 votes in the state of Florida and gave him enough electoral votes to win.
So your vote definitely does count. 500.
Well, Florida really does. And being that it's the biggest swing state, because Texas is not, and California is not. California is very blue. In fact, I gather now there might not even be a Republican nominee for governor or senator this year, because in California, the top two vote getters on primary day are the competitors. And right now, the top two in each case are Democrats. So there'll be no Republican nominee for governor or senator in California. And Texas may eventually become a swing state, but still, it's pretty red right now. It's pretty certain red. Although that Senate race, Beto O'Rourke against Ted Cruz, there is a chance that Beto O'Rourke, the Democrat, a congressman from El Paso, could beat him. And I hope that's true, because in fact, he's challenged Ted Cruz to have two debates in Spanish. Beto O'Rourke knows Spanish. Ted Cruz, although he's Cuban-American, has very poor Spanish, but he's been challenged to do two debates completely in Spanish, and he hasn't given an answer yet, which I think is interesting.
Is Mr. O'Rourke Latino or is he Irish? That name kind of sounds like a combination.
He's Irish. I think he may have, I think he has some Hispanic ancestry, but at least his father is Irish. Yeah, I don't know the whole background right at the moment. But he's a very interesting congressman, and he has a real shot. He's only within 3 points. He's 3 points behind Ted Cruz. Ted Cruz, you know, is not the most likable guy. You know, I think you have probably heard that other senators have joked about the fact that they would not mourn. I think one said they would not mourn it if he died or something like that, and then laughed. They just don't like him. His own colleagues do not like Ted Cruz.
He would seem to be a divisive person, not unlike our beloved President Donald, whom we always speak about.
Well, I'll tell you, in 2016, I would argue that I thought the two most dangerous, in my mind, candidates were Trump and Cruz. And I really thought Cruz had a better chance at the beginning of being nominated. I was not happy about it. See, Rubio I could accept. I could accept Bush or Kasich, particularly Kasich. But I did not like Ted Cruz, and I think he's an arrogant SOB, and I do not like what he says or what he does or even to look at him. I can't stand looking at him. He looks like the devil to me somehow.
Yeah, he's not really the most camera-friendly gentleman out there. Of course,
no, he's not.
The last,
and Beto O'Rourke is. So if you go by looks, Beto O'Rourke will win, if that counts, which I don't know if it does.
But, and before I get off on a tangent like I always do, let's touch on a couple topics that are kind of related to things that you just said. You are listening to a finer mid-morning coffee break with Adam, that's I, and the professor, Dr. Ron Feynman, our resident presidentologist here on this primary election day in the great Buckeye State. You know, if you're 18 or over, you have no excuse not to vote. So, vote. Doesn't matter if it's for a candidate that I'm personally not liking. It's okay. That's our right as Americans. Get out and vote for the person that you like. And may the best man, best woman win. Because that's what it's all about here in this great country we call America. If you're not listening in Ohio, that's great because we love our listeners all over the world. Whenever your election is, please exercise your right and go to the polls. It's important in this democratic process in the great United States of America. You talked about death, Ron. Not a pleasant topic, but there's been something going around on the internet that I think you posted on your Facebook page. And that is that John McCain has iterated that he does not want to have President Donald Trump at his funeral. In fact, he would like to have former President Barack H. Obama, who, interestingly, he fought a rather intense battle and didn't win, of course, for the presidency in recent history. Any opinion on that, Ron? Do you think it took a lot of chutzpah, to say, so to speak, for John McCain to say that?
Well, I think he's right, but I'll tell you, I see Orrin Hatch on Monday said he didn't think that was right, that he should not, that McCain should ask Trump to come to his funeral, but I think McCain is right. I also find it interesting the two people who defeated McCain, but they are decent people, Obama for the election and George W. Bush for the nomination in 2000, 8 years earlier, that they are going to be, they have been asked to do the eulogies whenever he passes away. And I think that's really wonderful. And we have to remember that John McCain always got along well with the opposition Democrats. He was a good friend of Ted Kennedy, for instance, and many other Democrats. He's always crossed the aisle. I haven't always liked everything he's said and done, but he's a decent man. He's a war hero. He suffered for our country, you know, being tortured in North Vietnam. And Donald Trump has shown no respect for him, calling him not a war hero, you know, back in 2015, and basically still nasty toward him now. So I think it's right that Trump should not be, and I don't think he will. I don't think he's going to go if he's not invited. I don't think he would disrupt things. I'm sure he won't, but I think it's the proper thing to do. But I wanted to mention also, I was speaking to my oldest son, David, and he said to me that what McCain said about, which apparently he's written in his book that it's coming out on May 22nd, that that if he, McCain, had picked Joe Lieberman, Democratic senator from Connecticut, who was, of course, Jewish, instead of Sarah Palin, that he would have done better. And my son thinks he might have won. And I said to him, really? How do you figure that? And he said, well, the election was close in several states with large Jewish populations, and he thinks If Lieberman had been on the ticket, he might have McCain won Florida and won Pennsylvania and a few other states, and he might have won the election. I thought that was a very interesting thought. No way to prove it, but an interesting concept.
I agree. Palin was one of the, I'm sorry to say it, stupidest choices for vice president I could think of. She certainly was intriguing.
And Quayle was also horrible.
and I'm glad he picked a female. I just think there could have been a better female. As I've said, she kind of reminds me of the female reincarnation of Dan Quayle. You know, young, attractive, nice-looking family, but not the sharpest tool in the shed.
Yes.
And I think Lieberman, who, again, he's a party flipper. I'm not even sure what party he's with currently. He kind of goes back and forth.
Well, now he's out of the Senate. He retired, but he had been an independent Democrat when the Democrats rejected him in the primary in Connecticut in 2006. And, you know, he's a person I have mixed feelings about, but it would be interesting if he had a cross-party nomination. That was also thought of back in 68 by Hubert Humphrey, that he thought of Nelson Rockefeller to be his running mate, but then did not offer it to him. I wonder if he could have won over Nixon if he had done that. You know, it's an interesting thought, but it's all, you know, a novel, like what if. There's no way to know what would have been different. It's just an interesting concept, you know.
I mean, as an independent, that idea is very attractive to me because I care really little about political parties. I'd like to see a mixture of two candidates that are moderate, but I'm not sure that they would have enough backing because it's like, who would back them? Some people are very supportive of their particular party. Myself,
yes.
I go person by person.
Well, we're talking about that. There is the potential, though they deny it, of John Kasich running with John Hickenlooper, the governor of Colorado, who's a Democrat, and Kasich, of course, is Republican, but they both laugh it off. But that would be a balanced ticket in theory if it was to be Kasich and Hickenlooper. Just that name, Hickenlooper, is a funny name. But
Hickenlooper, that's a funny name. I would vote for them. I like
12 letters, Hickenlooper, longer than Eisenhower, as far as the length of the word, Hickenlooper.
What I'd like to know, do you think Donald Trump could spell that name?
Probably not. But that would actually be quite an interesting ticket. Governor Kasich will be out, and Governor Hickenlooper of Colorado, because they work well together, and they're at their opposite parties. So who knows? Maybe that is a possibility.
Well, as my mama always said, politics makes strange bedfellows.
Yes.
to put it mildly. Wouldn't Joe Lieberman kind of be like Bob Dylan? Remember how Bob Dylan kind of switched his religion from Christian to Jewish? He switched back and forth multiple times. And he's kind of like Joe Lieberman, kind of switching political parties. I just kind of thought about that.
Yes.
But you're aware how Bob Dylan kind of switched religions back and forth. So Lieberman's kind of... I know we kind of did switch back and forth, but he was kind of moderate. He wasn't like he really went from liberal to conservative. It was more just a label.
Yes, well, he was a Democrat and then an independent, but he was considered more conservative than most Democrats in the Senate. Not conservative, but more so than most. And then he was beaten by a liberal Democrat in the primary, and then he won a three-way race in Connecticut in 2006. But in 12, he decided not to run again, so he's retired now.
Of course, we do have somebody who, when he was mayor of the great city of New York, was considered a very liberal Republican. Mr. Giuliani. We'll talk about Mr. Giuliani a little later in the show.
Oh,
but
God.
Just
also,
a little.
John Lindsay earlier was switched to the Democratic Party. He had been a Republican who ran as a liberal and then became a Democrat in the 70s. But then Giuliani. Yeah, Giuliani. Oh, my God.
But yeah, we shall. We'll table him for a little bit later because I know you have strong feelings about the gentleman. Also, several minutes ago, you talked about people who are good looking and people who are not good looking. Obviously, one of my favorite good-looking people, Mrs. Trump, she's been in the news quite a bit. And
yesterday, yes.
And it had to do with what her platform was. And it seems like it took a little time for her to kind of get across what she wanted to stand for. And I told Scott Spears after Trump won the election, I think she'd be a good spokesperson for people being multilingual, as she is. And I think indirectly she is, but her...
Yes.
Her important issue, and it's one that is extremely timely, is cyberbullying. And let's hope we put an end to that.
I commend it for that.
And, you know, the internet is free speech at work, but doesn't mean that you have a license to go ahead and bully people, to harass them. It's unacceptable. And it's just amazing how grown adults don't act their age, they act their shoe size. And that's an exaggeration.
Yeah, your own husband does a cyberbully.
Right, and that's what I was getting
Twitter,
to.
But I mean, he's a bully himself, yeah.
Right. mutual Facebook friend of ours, Monique. I'm sure she listens to the show because she's very active on Facebook.
Oh, yes, and, Monique, yes.
Right, and posting to your Facebook blogs. She kind of said, yeah, why don't you start with your husband? And what do you think about that, Ron? Is Trump a cyber bully? And is he kind of being a little hypocritical with his wife trying to curb cyberbullying, and maybe he should look in the mirror? What are your thoughts about that?
Well, absolutely. And I mean, I think today he was giving her a kiss and a hug, and I thought it was all for the cameras, because I've gathered that they really have almost no relationship together anymore except their son, and I feel bad for their son. No, I think he's a cyberbully in the sense that he does it on Twitter, the way he rips people apart, and it's just a disgrace. It really is. And, you know, but I just think that she's in the marriage, you know, for her son, I think, primarily, and because it's hard when you're married to the president to go and move to divorce. But I don't think it's going to last a lifetime. I don't think, look, Giuliani just is getting his third divorce. It's crazy. You know, these people, they have no value system at all. It's just a disgrace, and everything's all right in their mind, and I don't agree with that.
So we would tend to agree that their marriage is one that is for their child, and I, you know, as we agree, you know, I'm quite a fan of Mrs. Trump. I know you do like her, not to the extent that I do, but certainly your opinion is positive. She is an excellent mother.
Absolutely.
Her position is very difficult. Barron, he's obviously very uncomfortable as first son, and I not
who
sure what to
be
say.
But by a father like him, gosh,
right? But maybe Melania Trump, maybe she subconsciously picked the cyberbullying platform as kind of a message to her husband.
I don't think he's going to get the message. I think she probably did, but I don't think he can figure that out. Or he's too egotistical and narcissistic to think about, oh, what is she doing? I don't think he thinks deeply about anything. He has, you know, to me, I'm very worried still, you know, because of the news that came on Monday night about the Attorney General of New York State, Eric Schneiderman, who's been going after Trump on Trump University. He got a decision and other things, and now we've learned that he's been involved with abuse of four different women, and he's just, as of Monday night, he resigned, yes, last night. And, I mean, he was a real star for women's rights and also for going after Trump on the whole issue of his financial dealings in New York State. And now with him being gone, I have a feeling the whole case against Trump in New York State is going to collapse. And that's bad for anybody who thinks Trump shouldn't get away with what he's done that's wrong. And I think he's going to now, at least the New York part of it.
Yeah, we'll touch on that and Giuliani. But first, just wrap up the First Lady issue, Ron.
Yes.
You have seen many First Ladies in your lifetime, which is, again, a little bit longer than my lifetime. And it kind of comes up, it's like, well, the First Lady, almost like we think of the royal family, does the First Lady, is that really a position? Do you think it's important for the First Lady to have a cause, to be visible? And is it okay if the First Lady is not comfortable being in the spotlight? Because initially, Barron and Melania stayed at Trump Tower, and they really weren't heard from. And now she's becoming more in the forefront. Is that something which is important? Now, we've talked about Betty Ford and how much we admire her work against drug abuse.
Yeah, I really love her, yeah.
And obviously Eleanor Roosevelt. And of course, Hillary Clinton was a strong first lady, but I think it's because she wanted her husband's job. That was a lot of the reason. But is it important? Have you, in the dozen or so first ladies that you've witnessed in your lifetime, Ron, is it important? Is it an obligation of the first lady to have a cause to believe in, or is it okay if she just kind of sits by the sidelines and just goes with the flow rather than being as active as, let's say, Mrs. Clinton or Roosevelt or Betty Ford or possibly in the coming months, Melania Trump?
Yeah, I think since Jacqueline Kennedy on, it's been a different position. I mean, Mrs. Eisenhower and Mrs. Truman really kept very quiet and did not do much at all in public. But starting with Kennedy and then Lady Bird Johnson and even Pat Nixon and then, of course, Betty Ford and Rosalind Carter and, of course, Nancy Reagan and Barbara Bush and Hillary Clinton and of course, also George Laura Bush and also, also with Michelle and now Melania. I think it's become much more of a public position that you have to be active somewhat because of cable and because of the internet and because of news coverage now, which is so much greater than it was. I don't think you can have someone like a Mrs. Eisenhower or a Mrs. Truman anymore. It'd be very, very hard to have that.
So as times have changed, we have more receiving information directly. We don't wait for the newspaper in the morning. We can go online and catch news immediately. We can communicate. Presidents are tweeting. Obviously, we have Facebook and everything that's available now electronically. Plus, the newspapers and magazines, they're still around, just not to the extent that they were even 20 yeah. years ago. There is a bit of an obligation for the First Lady to be visible. And you're right. I couldn't tell you anything about Mamie Eisenhower or Bess Truman. I just know their first names. I'm not even quite sure why. But I couldn't tell you one thing about either of those two ladies. But I could, obviously, because I was a young adult during their time in the White House, I could tell you plenty about Hillary Clinton, about Michelle Obama, Betty Ford, etc. So
yes.
The days of the quiet First Lady, those are probably over. And we're going to see...
Yeah, let me interject here that there was one person running for president in the past whose wife didn't want to have anything to do with it and was never seen with him while he was campaigning. Howard Dean, the governor of Vermont at that time in 2004, and then he didn't win the nomination, John Kerry did. He was running a campaign and his wife was private. She didn't want to be in public. She was never with him. And I wondered, would this really work if he had actually been nominated and elected? And it didn't happen. But she was very, very private, and I don't know how it would have worked out in 2004. There have been President Howard Dean, but of course it didn't happen. But I remember thinking that at the time. This is strange, you know.
Right. And in recent memory, Bernie Sanders, didn't he really hear much about his family at all?
Toward the end, but not as much in the beginning. No, that's true. Not as much until toward the end. You know, later on, she did get more involved, yes.
Whereas their only bachelor president, James Buchanan, you know, things being different back then. So if a president is a bachelor, that would very well be an impediment to his winning the election, or a female president being as a bachelorette.
Cory Booker of New Jersey has never been married, so he's a bachelor, and he's a potential Democratic nominee, yes.
But do you think that having a spouse does kind of help you? Would people be less likely to vote, less likely to trust somebody who's not married, or... Is it just a case by case situation? Because it just does seem that the First Lady is.
I think it's pretty important, or first man, if you ever get a woman in. You know, I do think it's important because it's like, I think even though there's hypocrisy, there's this thought of family values, and the thought is you should have a family, you know, and have children. Even if, let's say, you've been widowed, like Jefferson was widowed, or Martin Van Buren was widowed, but at least you had been married and you had children, at least. And then the daughter, if you had a daughter, they each had a daughter, acted as First Lady, you know, so... I do think it's important. I don't know if it's essential, but I don't know if being a bachelor like Cory Booker is a plus. I don't know. As far as it depends on the whole circumstances at the time, but it'd be better to have a partner, you know.
I think when Sarah Palin was Alaskan governor, they called her husband Todd First Dude. He would be the first dude.
Yes.
And I remember people wearing T-shirts that said Bill Clinton for First Lady, which I thought was kind of amusing.
Well, one thing I got to say is back about 20 years ago, there was an event where Giuliani and Donald Trump, were involved in this comedy routine, and Giuliani dressed up as a woman. It's famous. You can get it on the internet. And he was talking like a woman, and Trump was with him. It was hysterical. And I wondered, he was mayor then. I said, why is he doing this? Of course, he was, I think, getting divorced, but he had his third wife. But the whole thing was so strange when Giuliani did that. And I don't know why he ever did it in the first place, but you can look that up on the internet, on YouTube. It's quite hysterical.
So speaking of Rudy Giuliani, now he was a very popular mayor of New York City. And one thing I noticed, I remember I went to New York City a couple times. It was in the late 90s before 9/11. And I was just impressed how clean and how safe the city seemed, because we used to visit my grandmother on the Upper West Side. The city kind of scared me. Yeah, it's wonderful, but it didn't really seem safe and it wasn't very clean. And even Harlem, I drove through there. I said, "This is a beautiful area. It's what it should be." And I was very impressed by the cleanliness, and I felt as safe as I do in my own neighborhood in New York City. And talking to people there was, well, Giuliani has cleaned the city up. He's tough on crime, and he's wonderful. But it seems like 20 years later that Giuliani has changed. Let's put it that way. And although he is thought of as being a mayor who turned around the city and the city continues to flourish, the Giuliani we're getting now is a bit different. Well, let's leave it at that. And his alignment with Trump seems not just odd and mysterious, but doesn't really seem very, very palatable. I'm not quite sure how else to say it. Now, you've had some strong...
I want to say that in 2007, Giuliani was ahead in polls for the Republican presidential nomination. Then he collapsed, but he looked like really quite a liberal, in quotes, not liberal like a Democrat, but pretty much like a so-called most liberal of the Republican candidates and all that. But boy, has he changed. And also, even in 16, when Trump won, Giuliani started to act really nutty, and he was talking he was going to be appointed to the cabinet, and then Trump decided not to do it. So, I mean, it's Giuliani, something is, I think he's mentally unhinged. Yeah, I mean, so in a real serious way.
I would be right in that Giuliani at one time was very popular. Yes, he was a rather left-leaning Republican. And if you know me, left-leaning Republicans tend to be similar in beliefs to myself, that is, progressive or to the left on people issues and conservative economically. Which is, you know, in a general sense, kind of the way my politics tend to flow. But now Giuliani, he seems to be acting, out of lack of a better term, a little nutty. And sometimes that does happen. People do change.
And he's a bragging, but like Trump, he's got to be always noticed. He wants attention no matter what stupid thing he says. And I don't understand why he doesn't realize how foolish he looks and how he's harming Trump.
So what has happened, Ron? And I think we had talked about this too, that although you don't think he was a bad mayor, he may have been given a little too much credit for some of the positive steps in New York City at 25 years ago. That maybe he was given a little too much credit, but sometimes you're in the right place at the right time. But bottom line is what has happened to Rudy Giuliani? It seems like the man that I had a lot of respect for is a different person altogether. He looks the same, just a little older. He has the same name. So he's got to be the same person, but why is he so different, and why has he become so much more controversial and unlikable, I guess that's a word, versus a Giuliani that was mayor of New York City?
I think there's really a mental issue there. I'm not saying it to be funny. I think there's something, you know, some people, they change as they age, and I think he has changed, and I think that he just wants attention and to have a position of power, and yet Trump passed him by. Now he suddenly took him on, but it seems like he doesn't care even if he's insulted by Trump. You know, a lot of people, I don't understand how they let Trump insult them and mistreat them, and they leave, and nobody says anything. It's just amazing to me how nobody's willing to speak out. So this is very dangerous. I hope Republican Party has become complicit in everything that's going wrong in this country as far as, you know, Trump's abuse of power. Now, yes, the economy's better, but actually was fine under Obama as it ended. He brought about the Great Recovery. Yes, we're talking about North Korea, but I don't know if that's going to work out. But as one of my students said recently, what if he gets a real accomplishment with North Korea? I said, well, I'll give him credit. Every president can have credit for something, but it still doesn't take away from his faults and his sins. So it still doesn't make him a great president.
Right. And as we talked about on previous shows, a president's rhetoric really does go far. Now, neither of us is a big fan of the policies of Ronald Reagan. We do admire his sense of humor and just as a man, because he's a good man, just his policies in many cases led much to be desired. But his rhetoric, the tear down the wall and the evil empire stuff, in the end, that seemed to benefit the world. The wall did get torn down. So
yeah, think about it. Tear down this wall, Reagan said, and Trump is saying build this wall or else.
Yeah, I guess the more things change, the more they stay the same. But I mean, when Reagan said the evil empire, that caused a lot of people, their eyes kind of popped out,
and I said
that's some pretty strong words. That looks like it could put us at risk of nuclear war. Well, instead, the wall got torn down, and it ended up Russia ended up being in a political system more like what we would have in Western Europe or here in the States. Now, we're seeing maybe some easing of tensions in North and South Korea, and maybe they can shake hands and be buds. But do you think that maybe the Rocket Man rhetoric and the other things that Trump has said, has that really made a difference? Not unlike Reagan with his evil empire, that in the end was probably something that was good.
I don't know. We'll have to wait and see. I don't think the rhetoric of either him or Kim Jong-un in the last year was a good thing, but suddenly they seem to be involved, it seems from a distance at least, in a love affair, in quotes, and I don't get it. Even with Kim Jong-un, with the South Korean president, I don't know. He's smiling and he seems so decent and human, but remember how many people have suffered in North Korea and how that one individual, American, who was sent home was basically dead when he arrived home, and how he had his own, I'm talking about Kim, had his own half-brother and his uncle killed. So, and so many people have been killed. I don't see this man as someone to be trustworthy of or to really believe in. But I guess trying to promote an agreement. But at the same time, look at Iran. He's doing the exact opposite of Trump. It looks like he's trying to provoke a war with Iran. So this is doesn't make any sense. Yeah. It's contradictory behavior.
Now, Ron, when Reagan talked about the evil empire, and I was in college then, and as a science major, but I kept an eye on these things because I wasn't really a big fan of Reagan. And where I went to school, it was pretty conservative. We talked before about how science and engineering schools are more to the right, and liberal arts schools more to the left. Well, I was in more of a engineering and science school, so I was definitely to the left of my classmates and professors, interestingly enough. But when Reagan talked about the evil empire, did you get a little worried that that could be something that may come to bite us you know where? And then in the end, it seems like it might have been beneficial because we're able to calm down tensions.
Well, it seems like it might have worked, but it's also, I think, because the Soviet Union, the new leader was Gorbachev. That was not true when Reagan said evil empire. It was Andropov, and it was an earlier period. It was right after Brezhnev died, or around the time Brezhnev died. I think that we have to give a lot of credit to Gorbachev and not just to Reagan. I think the Cold War ended because of Gorbachev realizing the Soviet system had to go. And I think he's still alive. He's in his 80s. I don't think he's applauded enough, but I think he's someone to really admire as a very crucial Soviet leader.
So you're giving a lot of the credit there to the Soviets, but Reagan certainly had
Gorbachev,
a hand in it.
Not so much to the Soviet Union, but Gorbachev, because he was the leader who moved toward reconciliation and the ability to get agreements. And Reagan went along, and Nancy helped him do that, too. Nancy promoted that idea as well, Nancy Reagan, the first lady.
Is it a little ironic that we now talk about the Russians interfering in the election and have things turned around a little bit?
It's not the Soviet Union, but remember that Putin is part of the old Soviet system. This is not the 90s with Boris Yeltsin, when things seem, although chaotic there, actually a much more democratic system in Russia. It's not democratic, small d, anymore. So I think we're, in a way, we're in a very dangerous position, much like we were in the Cold War. The former U.S. ambassador to Russia, Michael McFaul, just came out with a book in which he calls From Cold War to Hot Peace. An interesting title, that we have so-called peace, we don't have a war, but yet, in a way, we have a situation that's very conflicting and could lead to trouble.
So the Russia under Putin is not the same kind of government that it was 20 years ago.
No, and it's not even what I say when Gorbachev was working to end this system. Gorbachev was certainly, I would wish, of course, he's an old guy now, I would almost wish that Gorbachev was in Russia. I think it would be better for everybody. But a lot of people in Russia, of course, blame him for bringing down a system that guaranteed everybody, the basic needs of life, because the Soviet system did not create unemployment. Everybody had some kind of work or some kind of income. So it's like a mixed feeling Russians have about the old system, that it takes away your freedom, but it gives you certain guarantees as far as food and housing and things like that. Now there's no guarantees.
So the political structure of Russia, the method of government, is fragile. And with the United States, we're still a free country. We're still a republic. You go to work, you start a business, you get a paycheck, and we have some social programs, but a lot of things you end up paying out of your pocket. That doesn't really change too much, regardless of who is president. But in Russia, the person in charge can have a lot to do with it.
And Putin just got inaugurated for another term for 6 more years, and he'll be over 70 by that time. But the thought is he's going to probably stay the leader until he dies, unless, depending on when he dies. It could be just like China. We have two nations that China definitely already, and Russia, I don't think he intends to ever give it up as long as he's able to stay.
It sounds like you could get about three PhDs on the Russian governmental system. And
well, I tell you, there's a lot of people who are specialists on Russian history, because it's a field I studied a lot. It's not my specialty, but I mean, it was part of European history, and I really found it fascinating, the whole Soviet period. But I never thought it would end when it did in 1991. I was shocked by it. It was really a surprise, you know. So it shows you never know what the future's going to hold.
Just when you think you got it figured out, things change. We are talking to Dr. Ron Fineman, the progressive professor, on this primary election day in the great Buckeye State. Ron, what you told me, your internet was on the fritz, not Fritz Mondale, but on the fritz as in ill for a day or two, and you managed to get it fixed.
Until Monday evening, I went crazy. I realized how much I'm dependent on it. And so therefore, I did not post on the Progressive Professor on Sunday. I had not done it before. I had to get a new modem, so I skipped a day, and I knew you were going to bring it up.
It seems like in 2018 that being without water would probably be less detrimental than being without internet. It's really quite amazing how our priorities are different.
Yeah, I got to catch up on all my email. It's unbelievable how much email I get. So I'm going to have to spend time, today, Tuesday, to go over this stuff that I didn't get to yet.
Yeah, so if you are wondering why there is no Progressive Professor entry for May 6th on Sunday.
May 6th, that's right.
That is
There's
why.
Nothing for May 6th. That's
now,
correct.
You wrote in your blog yesterday, May 7th, Trump's destruction of reputation of two professions, medicine and law, and talking about
two doctors. Unbelievable, isn't it? With Bornstein and with Jackson and the lawyers, it's really undermining. Of course, some people would say, why even give respect to those two professions? But I think we should. But then we see not everybody that's in those professions really is high quality or worthy of respect.
How do you rank Dr. Jackson against Dr. Ben Carson? Should both of those guys hand over their medical degrees? Because it doesn't really seem like they're practicing. I know Carson doesn't practice anymore, but he is a doctor. I guess he could practice.
He was a brain surgeon,
if he wanted to.
Yeah. But well, he was a great brain surgeon, but I think he also might be having mental issues. I think his behavior when he ran, I think he acts like he's a little strange. I think there are changes chemically going on in Giuliani, I think in Trump, and I think also in Carson. And it's not just a joke. I think it's serious. Now, Jackson is much younger, and I just think his examination of the president saying that he only weighed 239 pounds and that he had good genes to live to 200, those were preposterous things to say. So it undermined his reputation. But Bornstein, the one that he had as doctor all those years, just seeing the guy and the way he behaved in 2015, and now he claims, and apparently it's true, they took his files illegally, really, out of his office, the originals. I mean, that really shows almost like Nazi Gestapo kind of tactics to do that. But Bornstein is like, who would want to go to this doctor? You know, I that's why I wrote about that on the blog yesterday.
Jackson has an excellent resume. He was an admiral in the U.S. Navy, which is the equivalent of a general. He was George W. Bush and Barack Obama's doctor. But
what's going on. I don't know why he allowed himself to be put into a position like he put himself in. And now he's not even the White House physician anymore. So it's just, I don't know. It's just so tragic. It seems like everybody that comes near Trump is somehow damaged. Either they do it themselves like Giuliani or others, or have it done to them for others.
And ever since he said that Donald Trump, as you're quoting, weighed 239 pounds and could live to be 200 years of age. Wouldn't that be an interesting thought? Because of his genes.
And imagine this thing that he wanted to be president for life if he could be. And imagine we lived to be 200. We would have to deal with him for 130 years more.
That would be very interesting, to say the least.
That'd be more than half the history of the country in time so far, you know?
We would
We
would not be a republic. We'd be a retrumplic.
Yes. Oh, my gosh.
And again, I'm allowed to make up words because the president does. That's why I have officially declared the word presidentologist to be the way that we describe
yes.
Dr. Ron Fineman. And of course,
but that's the reason with Trump why this Eric Schneiderman story is really damaging, because now there's a case now against Trump in New York that will probably lose out because now the Attorney General has resigned as of Monday night, and it's going to help. In fact, I read that Donald Trump Jr. already made a comment about it about Schneiderman, and I think he's reveling in it because now the case against his father in New York State is weakened. There's no Attorney General. Mm-hmm. And he can't be involved in the case because of what the accusations are, which I gather are true against four women.
So it seems like Mr. Schneiderman should learn to keep his pants on. Let's just put it that way.
I swear, we could write a book on all the people whose lives are destroyed by that, including like Gary Hart, going back to the 80s. But it didn't affect Bill Clinton, and it didn't affect Donald Trump for some reason. But everybody else pretty much got damaged, or continues to be damaged, when they can't control their behavior, you know?
Okie dokie. Well, as my mama also always told me, time flies when you're having fun, and jeepers creepers, our time is almost over. It seems like we've touched on the topics we were going to, but discussed some areas similar to the main topics. And as like any show that features myself, Adam, a wisecrack or two or three, and sometimes a interesting joke just to liven things up and understand that.
I add about the Ohio race that's going on today.
Yes.
I hope Cordray wins over Kucinich, but I don't know. I get the feeling Kucinich might be the Democratic nominee. I just don't think Kucinich is the proper person.
Right.
But I don't know. We'll see what happens. Obviously, we don't know the results yet. It's later today. But
here at the station, we've had many candidates and running mates. Nathan Estruth, the running mate for Republican contender Mary Taylor, a current lieutenant governor. They've been on the air multiple times and really appreciate it. Make your decision. Vote for the candidate you think is best. And if you're like me, don't worry about the party. Just go ahead and pick the person you think.
Yeah, for what I've gathered, Mike DeWine is favored to be the Republican and Kucinich the Democrat. Then Mike DeWine will win the seat, you know, will be the governor, the Republican. It's a Republican state more often anyway, but I think Kucinich would not be the best choice, but we'll have to see what happens.
Let me just say this. If it was DeWine against Kucinich, I'd have to pick the one that I would find to be the most tolerable. I would rather have the Jeopardy champion, Mr. Cordray. And
so if it was DeWine against Kucinich, would you vote or would you stay home?
I would probably vote, but I guess I would vote. I would probably vote for Kucinich, but believe me, it wouldn't be with a smile.
Yeah.
But we shall see.
Yeah, DeWine was a senator. He was pretty conservative. So if I was there, I don't think I'd vote for him. But I don't know if I could vote for Kucinich because I also think he's whacked. I think he's crazy. He switches around. He used to be to the left. Now he sounds more supportive of Trump. I mean, it's like, what's going on with these people's behavior? Are they all going crazy?
Yeah,
I don't understand. You know, I really don't. You know,
yeah, I mean, Kucinich is known for being a bit of a flipper. I'm not sure what else to say. Kind of flip-flops. And DeWine
is... Don't forget, he was Dennis the Menace in Cleveland 40 years ago.
DeWine is a career politician, so certainly his resume is very good, but he is probably too far to the right for a lot of people. But we shall see. Just when you thought you got it figured out, things change. And that's what we said before the presidential election of a year and a half ago, when everybody thought Hillary Clinton would be sitting in the White House, and...
Yes.
She isn't. The Donald trumped the Hill and remains on Capitol Hill. So, as my mama always also used to say, don't count your chickens before they hatch. And I think
that's right.
That is very true.
And you have to worry about polls. Are they accurate? And whether the Russians are involved in colluding? You know, even in the future, we have to worry about the midterm elections now coming up.
But
plenty to worry about.
We will talk about the results of the election next time we get together. Dr.
Okay.
Ron Fineman, thank you so much for joining me today on The Talking Place. Again, I want to sound like a broken record, but listeners, get out and vote. There's no excuse not to. It is your...
Yeah, thank you very much. It was a lot of fun as always, Adam.
It is your right as an American to do that. Anything, can you want to go in and put a pitch into our listeners, Ron, tell people to vote today?
absolutely. You should all get out there and vote, because if you don't vote, you have no right to complain. And honestly, everybody should be involved. It's, every vote matters. Many elections are close. You can't be sure that it's going to be an easy victory for anybody. You need to get out there and vote. Everybody should vote.
And as a Floridian, you can talk from personal experience about the 2000 presidential election. A few hundred votes, a few hundred hanging chads made the difference.
Oh, my God, yes. What a disaster it was.
And so don't think that just your one vote won't matter, because it does. Thanks again.
Absolutely.
Ron, for joining us. Have a great rest of your Tuesday.
Okay, you too. Thanks again.
Adam Lepp here, thanking you for listening to A Finer Mid-Morning Coffee Break with Adam and the Professor.